Hello and welcome to another edition of Bill Allen's Facebook Bible Studies. We are coming to you live from downtown Tyler, Texas. If you're watching on Bill's Facebook page, that would be me, at 3 p.m. on Thursday afternoon. If you're not watching live, then that's great. If you think that you have to watch live to catch it, that's not the case because you can watch it on my Facebook page at any time, of course. Just scroll down and you can see all of them. Or you can go to our West Irwin Live or West Irwin Church of Christ Facebook pages, and you'll see them there, as well as our westirwin.com website on our Connect tab. And then you'll find the live streaming page, and you'll see all of our worship services, my Facebook lessons, a whole lot of stuff. And so glad to have you joining along. I hope that this study is encouraging to you. Hello to my friend Cindy and Eric Mosley. Saw your little baby boy last night, and wonderful his wonderful wife, and of course that darling little child of yours playing so happily in our play area of our after our Wednesday night classes. So shout out to all of you. We are finding ourselves now finally through the end of Proverbs after the last two or three or four lessons. And now we are looking at the last two wisdom literature books, at least for now. We'll cover Job later. But we've looked at Psalms and we've looked at Proverbs, and the two left are Song of Songs or Song of Solomon and Ecclesiastes. We'll spend more time on Ecclesiastes. It's much longer, and we'll take a look at that. But first, a little bit about the Song of Songs, or the Song of Solomon, as it's traditionally been called. It kind of starts out the Song of Songs of Solomon, or Solomon's Song of Songs, something like that. And it is written, as best we can tell, by Solomon, and it is a love story. In fact, sometimes I have named a study of this True Love Ways after the great Buddy Holly song. Yes, love the Buddy Holly story, love his music. But Legard Smith says this about Song of Songs, the book, as in the Song of Solomon. Unlike most of the preceding wisdom literature, specifically Psalms and Proverbs, the Song of Songs deals more with romantic love than with wisdom, prayer, or praise. I think that is exactly right. And then he says this, it expresses unrestricted joy in a relationship of love. And despite language which is unusually graphic and sensual in description, there is no hint of improper lust. And I think that's significant. Yes, if you were to make a movie out of the Song of Songs or the Song of Solomon, it would at least be rated PG-13 and possibly R, because it is a bit graphic. But there's no hint, as Legard Smith says, of any sexual immorality. It is strictly between a man and a woman, specifically a husband and a wife. And it is a wonderful love story. The wife speaks out some to her lover. The husband speaks out some to his beloved. And then there are friends that speak out some. And the way we know some of that is in the language. It is specific in the nouns about which one is masculine and which one is feminine. Much like the Greek language, much like Espanol. Spanish is that way as well. English, not so much. Sometimes it is, like his versus her. Some of the other words are just, you don't know for sure. But that's not the case in this. And throughout, again, it's talking about a relationship between a lover and his beloved. We're reminded of a few scriptures in the New Testament. Hebrews 13, verse 4 says this: marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure, for God will judge the adulterer and all the sexually immoral. You see, the book of Song of Songs is not a dirty book because it's speaking about the kind of love that is affirmed in Hebrews 13, 4, the kind of love that is said to be honorable and should be kept that way, honorable and pure. We dishonor it. We make the marriage love and sex impure when we try to describe it in ways other than between a husband and his wife, or between two members of the same sex. I realize that's not a popular notion today, but that is strictly the teaching of Scripture, Old Testament, the wisdom literature, the New Testament, even the Gospels, Jesus affirms that as he looks back at creation and speak about how God created us male and female, and how a man leaves his mother and father and becomes one flesh with his wife. And that is how God's plan intends it. That is the story in Genesis at creation, in the law, in the Psalms, and in this case, the Song of Songs, and in the letters such as Hebrews 13, also 1 Corinthians 7, where the Apostle Paul affirms love and sexual relations between a husband and wife, and even Jesus again in Matthew 19. So just a couple of verses from Song of Songs, and you can read that on your own. I want us to get to Ecclesiastes today and finish that. Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 16, "My beloved is mine and I am his." A similar statement in chapter 6, verse 3, "I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine." And then chapter 7, "I belong to my beloved and his desire is for me." You see that reciprocal desire, that reciprocal loyalty between a husband and a wife, both. I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. I belong to my beloved and his desire is for me. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. It's a wonderful book that describes that love between a husband and wife. Some have likened it between, similar to Ephesians 5, as Paul speaks about Christ and the church, and also in that context speaks from the image of a husband and wife and the unselfish servant love that they have for each other. That's what we find in the Song of Songs or Song of Solomon. Okay, so let's get to Ecclesiastes. You may be surprised to know that the birds sang a song back in the day, back in the 60s. Pete Seeger wrote the song, but really Solomon wrote the song, and we'll get to it from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, to everything turn, turn, turn. I may have to start singing that a bit later, but here's how Ecclesiastes starts. Chapter 1, verse 1, "The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem." Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. And you're thinking, wow, Bill, my life is discouraging enough. Why would I want to read a book? And granted, much of this book is from that perspective. Solomon is trying everything in the world to find purpose in life, but he's describing the journey. And he's describing all the different ways that you can try to find meaning and purpose in life. And many of them are good things, such as work. Hard work is a good thing. Relationships, good thing. But they're not the thing. And before Ecclesiastes is done, the wise man tells us what is the thing, what is the whole duty of mankind. But let's go on the journey with him for a little bit, shall we? He talks about everything under the sun. And so he's speaking about the human adventure. He's speaking about our human existence and how do we live. And he first of all says what not to live for. And there are several things in the first 11 verses that remind us these are things that are not worth living for. They're good things, some of them, but they're not the thing. Human achievements, worldly wisdom, pleasure, wealth, and so forth. In chapter 1, starting in verse 3, "What do people gain from all their labors, at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing." You get that feeling of unfulfilled. Verse 9, "What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun." You remember that statement from the book of Ecclesiastes, don't you? There's nothing new under the sun. Verse 10, "Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. And you're thinking, wow, this book really makes me feel great, Bill. But again, read it in its context. It is talking about a journey, trying to find meaning and purpose in life, and all of those things indicate that it's not going to be found in this world. And hard work is another thing that the writer of Ecclesiastes tried out to see if maybe this is what it's all about. Chapter 2, verse 17. So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. That's another one of the great sayings of Ecclesiastes, a chasing after the wind. You can never catch the wind. You can feel it, but you can't catch it. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. You know the statement, you can't take it with you? It's kind of where it originates. Verse 19 of chapter 2, and who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish? Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil, into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. Verse 20, so my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days their work is grief and pain. Even at night their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless. As important as hard work and diligence and a good job are, you can't live for them. That's not going to answer all the questions. It's not going to give you all the fulfillment. One of the things that we're almost surprised to read is external religion. This goes right along with where Jesus would be coming from later on in the Gospels. But the wise man in Ecclesiastes says much the same thing in chapter 5, beginning at verse 1. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. That's how they worshiped. Verse 2, do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. Jesus would support that. A dream comes when there are many cares and many words mark the speech of a fool. That's a little bit of a wisdom story there, isn't it? Many words mark the speech of a fool, just like a dream comes when we're really tired, when there are many cares. Verse 4 of chapter 5, when you make a vow to God, do not delay to fulfill it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to make a vow than to make one and not fulfill it. That's a great statement. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin, and do not protest to the temple messenger saying, my vow was a mistake. Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless, verse 7 says. And then he simply says this, therefore fear God. Again, we're talking about the right way to live and the wrong way to live, the purpose and meaning in life, the wisdom literature. Fearing God means holding him in the highest place, right, and reverencing him, respecting him, obeying him, avoiding what is wrong and doing what is right. The writer of Ecclesiastes begins to turn the page and he says, therefore, fear God. That external religion is not going to be enough. It's good to go to church. It's good to sing the songs, to pray the prayers, to take communion, all of those things. That's true. That's true. And they all have their place. But if they substitute for the God who gave us all those things, that's not good. That's practicing an external religion, much like the Jews of Jesus' day did, the scribes and Pharisees and priests. Jesus tells us, no, make it from the heart. Yes, do it, but do it from the heart and do it as a service, a humble obedience to the world, to the will of God. So the writer of Ecclesiastes also goes along and tells us some things we can't change that really we just need to learn to accept as we're trying to find meaning and purpose in how best to live. Some things we can't change. The first one is pretty obvious. the prosperity of the wicked and the suffering of the righteous. When we read Job later on this year, that is Job's central theme. Can we trust a God even when we don't understand him? When we look around and we see the righteous people suffering and the wicked people prospering, where's God in the midst of that? Well, the writer of Ecclesiastes says, you know, there's some things in this world that are just going to happen and we can't change. We read some of those in the book of Psalms as well. The psalmist asking God, why is it that all of this happens? Well, listen to the words of the wise men in Ecclesiastes, chapter 7, verse 15. In this meaningless life of mine, I have seen both of these, the righteous perishing in their righteousness and the wicked living long in their wickedness. That's a pretty rough thing there. And yet that is exactly what we understand is the truth. The wise man will go on and say, when times are good, be happy. And when times are bad, consider this, God has made the one as well as the other. And I think that's exactly right. Chapter 8, verse 14, there is something else meaningless that occurs on earth. The righteous who get what the wicked deserve, and the wicked who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless. We understand that that's going to happen. And if your whole philosophy and theology of life is based on the righteous prospering and the wicked suffering, you're going to be disappointed. That's exactly where Job was. And then when he started suffering, he said, wait a minute, his friends came and said, well, you must be wicked, because that's what we've always believed, right? And Job says, no, I'm not any more wicked than I've ever been. I don't understand this. Well, sometimes that's the way life is. It's something that we can't always change. Another thing that is a certainty that we can't change in Ecclesiastes is death. It's one of the things that we have in common. Ecclesiastes 9, beginning at verse 1. So I reflected on all this and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands. But no one knows whether love or hate awaits them. All share a common destiny. The righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices and those who do not. As it is with the good, so it is with the sinful. As it is with those who take oaths, so it is with those who are afraid to take them. Chapter 9, verse 3. This is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. The hearts of people, moreover, are full of evil, and there is madness in their hearts while they live, and afterward they join the dead. Anyone who is among the living has hope. Even a live dog is better off than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, and even their name is forgotten. Their love, their hate, and their jealousy have long since vanished. Never again will they have a part in anything that happens under the sun. Well, the wise man in Ecclesiastes may be overstating it a bit there, because we certainly believe that there is life after death, and I think he did too, but what is he saying? He's saying, hey, if you're alive, that means one day you will pass, you will die. That's the same fate no matter how much money you have, no matter where you live, what you come from. All of us share that in common. Unless Jesus returns, we will all one day face death. And the wise man says that's true of every single one of us. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 9, verse 27, as the writer of Hebrews is talking about the great salvation that comes through Jesus Christ, what he says in Hebrews 9, 27 is, it's appointed unto mankind once to die, and after that comes the judgment. But we who are of faith have confidence that when it comes to that judgment, God will see the saving sacrifice of Christ and not just our own sins. One more here of things we can't change before we get to the why to live and the how to live. Inability to know what is best or to control the future. We can't control the future. Chapter 8, verses 7 and 8. Since no one knows the future, who can tell someone else what is to come? As no one has power over the wind to contain it, so no one has power over the time of their death. As no one is discharged in time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. And there's a sense where none of us knows what the future holds. I mean, we can here in Northeast Texas, you can predict the weather to a point. Throughout the summer, it's going to be, warm nights, hot days, a chance of thunderstorm every afternoon. That's going to be pretty typical. But even then, you can't predict the weather. You can't know the future. And that's what the wise man says. How can you do that? And we think of the book of James in James chapter 4 when James says, "Hey, look, when you're making your plans, include God in those plans. Say if the Lord wills, we'll do this or that." And don't just say the words, but as you're making your plans, include God in them and God's will in them. And that's what the wise man in Ecclesiastes is saying. Hey, you don't know the future, but there is one who does. And he's the one that we should look to. Okay, well then, this last part is the why to live, keys to victorious living. When we went read through the book of Proverbs, we really talked about the how to live or the what to live by, the what things to do and not do when you live. In this case, in the book of Ecclesiastes, this is the journey that the writer has been on. He's tried all of these other things that just are good things, but not the way to live, not the reason to live, whatever they might be, your job, your relationships, your wealth, all of those things. The writer throughout Ecclesiastes has said, I've tried all of those. And we read a piece of that at the beginning of chapter one, too much of Ecclesiastes to read them all, because that's really the main thrust of Ecclesiastes, is to talk about each and every one of those things and say, well, I tried this, but it was just meaningless. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That's what the way the old King James Version translated it. Meaningless is how the NIV does. So what do you live for? Why do you live? Well, here are some keys to victorious living from the book of Ecclesiastes. And we begin with this great chapter, passage in chapter 3, that yes, it was the inspiration for that great song, "To everything turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. A time to be born, a time to die." Okay, let's let Solomon share the lyrics to that great song. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, beginning at verse 1. "There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace." It's such an incredible passage. The wise man saying, look, remember that timing is everything. Remember that we all experience these things, and sometimes the most important thing is making the decision about what time it is for this particular one. Is it a time to speak up or a time to be silent? Is it a time to tear or is it a time to mend? And throughout this incredible list, a great key to victorious living. Do what's appropriate, do what is the right time. Another thing that he shares about key to victorious living is a bit of a surprise for some, might be, that you would think in the Bible. Does it say this? Yes, it does. He says, enjoy your life. Enjoy your life. I think Jesus said that same thing. I've come so that you might have joy and that my joy may be fulfilled in you. Well, it's not talking about joy the way the world measures it. The book of Ecclesiastes is talking about a search for joy the way the world searches, and it's meaningless. It's vanity. It ends up only with frustration. But if you look to God, if you fear God, if you turn to God and seek to live His way, then there is joy, and you can enjoy life. Listen to these words from chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. "I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live. that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. Paul would talk about contentment in Philippians chapter 4. You can be content whether you have a little or a lot. And the wise man in Ecclesiastes is saying, enjoy your life. Find joy in whatever it is that you're doing. Find fulfillment. Paul would write to the Ephesians and the Colossians, whatever you do, do it as if you were serving the Lord, not just your boss, and certainly not yourself. And then you can find joy. Chapter 8, we started this, verses 14 and 15 a little bit earlier. There is something else meaningless that occurs on earth. The righteousness who get what the wicked deserve, and the wicked who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless. So I commend the enjoyment of life, because there is nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of the life God has given them under the sun. Be content. Find joy in what you do every day. Another one is trusting God's wisdom. In chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? When times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider this. God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, no one can discover anything about their future. Oh, we can try, and I think it's still good to have a savings account. That's not what we're saying. Our teens would say, oh, great, then I can quit school because I don't have to worry about it. No, that's not what this is saying. What is it saying? It's saying to trust God, it's saying to enjoy your life, but to realize there is one who has more knowledge, more wisdom, more insight than you. And the good news is that one is the one who made you. And the even better news is that one is the one who died for you. We can trust God's wisdom. The last one, of course, is something that we've seen very significantly throughout the Psalms, throughout the Proverbs, and now, of course, here in Ecclesiastes, as we've already seen, and that is to fear God, to hold God in the highest place of reverence. If you're looking for mission and purpose and fulfillment in life, you find it in God, and you find it only in God. Chapter 5, verse 7. As we read earlier at the end of this passage, chapter 5, verse 7, much dreaming and many words are meaningless, therefore fear God. That external religion, going through the motions, that's not going to help. It's not going to bring you fulfillment. Sometimes as an act of discipline, it's good to do that. We don't always feel like doing the right thing, and the right thing is always worth doing. And hopefully you can kind of act yourself into a better way of feeling. Sometimes that's good, but if that's where you are all the time, that's a problem. That's a heart problem. And the heart needs to fear God. The heart needs to hold God in the highest place, to put God number one on the throne in your heart. Therefore, the wise man says, fear God. In chapter 7, beginning in verse 15, in this meaningless life of mine, I have seen both of these, and we read this passage earlier, the righteous perishing in their righteousness and the wicked living long in their wickedness. And then he says this in verse 16, do not be over-righteous, neither be over-wise. Why destroy yourself? Do not be over-wicked, and do not be a fool. Why die before your time? It is good to grasp the one and not let go of the other. Whoever fears God will avoid all these extremes. Balance. Balance. Don't be overly righteous, but that's not permission to be overly wicked either. But rather from the heart, in sincerity, fear God. Find that balance in life where you look to Him and you see those commands and you're willing to do them. Because that's what God commands. You see those teachings of Scripture that say these are things that are, as Paul describes them in Galatians 5, works or deeds of the flesh. Don't live that way, but rather live according to the fruit of the Spirit. That's what a person does who fears God. No, we don't do those perfectly, but that's the path we're on, and that's what we strive to do. And through the grace of God, we will be able to do that faithfully, even if not perfectly, but faithfully. Why? Because we have given our lives to God. We have put Him number one in our lives. As God said in the Ten Commandments, the very first one, have no other gods before me. And that's whatever else is threatening to take the throne of your heart, and very likely it's yourself. Put that away and put God on that throne. Let Jesus, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the Prince of Peace, be the one who is on the throne in your heart. Chapter 8, verses 12 and 13. Although a wicked person who commits 100 crimes may live a long time, I know that it will go better with those who fear God, who are reverent before him. It's a great description of what it means to fear God. Yet because the wicked do not fear God, it will not go well with them, and their days will not lengthen like a shadow. I know that the wise man acknowledges that sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes we see the wicked prospering and the righteous suffering, but overall we know that it's going to be better for the person who fears God, who holds God in the highest reverence. That's the person who will do well in life, and that's the person who will live for eternity. Fear God, live in reverent fear before him, the wise man says. Well, one more passage, and it's one that perhaps you have heard before. It's the last two verses, actually, of the book of Ecclesiastes. And remember, we've been on a journey. We've been looking at all kinds of different things to try to find meaning and purpose in life. Good things, such as a job or a relationship or good health or whatever. Good things, but they're not good enough to live your life for. They're good things, and some of them are bad things that we need to stay away from. But we can see them in their right perspective. We can have that balance, and we can see them as a part of a life of one who fears God, who holds him in highest place in reverence. And now this is where the wise man in Ecclesiastes ends his journey. He comes to this place, and he says, you know, I've got it figured out. Now, I've tried everything, and most of it is meaningless. Everything is meaningless, he says. It just won't work. It just won't bring me the contentment and the fulfillment that I want and that I'm searching for. But he finally finds it, and he finds it in his Creator. He finds it in the Lord God. Ecclesiastes 12, verses 13 and 14. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. You want to know what to live for? How to find purpose and meaning in life? Here it is. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is the duty of all mankind. This is the whole of humanity. This is what we're to live for, and that will look differently for different people depending on your gifts and career choices and relationships and things like that. But ultimately, you go back to the question of, do we trust and obey, as the old hymn says? Do we fear God, and are we keeping his commandments? The writer of the wise man who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, again, says this: now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. May God bless us all as we seek to fear him and keep his commandments. I'll see you either on Sunday or next Tuesday. God bless.